You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 150 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It's a calm, normal Tuesday. Nothing really happened. There's no emergency of any kind. Biggest news today was the Hall of Fame inductions and all that fun stuff. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. There's an emergency, and here we are. Scott Coleman's joining me. And, I guess we didn't have to do a podcast, Scott, but when the Braves make a move for a starter, we have to do that, and that's what happened on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's funny. If you haven't read Fangraphs' article about the Braves re-signing Markakis, they even kind of said exactly what you just said in so many words that usually they don't write articles about guys who signed one-year deals for basically $4 million. But in this case, they did, because it's a guy who's going to start a whole bunch of games on a team that's going to try to win a division next year, and it's certainly a little different than what people probably expected 3 months ago, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, reigning division champion signs outfielder to contract to be the primary starter is something that you could say about this move. So obviously this entire podcast, we should just say now, is going to be Nick Markakis related. We will, I'm sure, have a couple of non sequiturs elsewhere, but no like full rundown today. It's all Markakis all the time here on the podcast. And, you know, detail wise, something to point out here, Markakis is of course back. The Braves announced this move, and then Alex Anthopoulos talked on the record. So did Markakis after that, but it hit on Tuesday afternoon. Originally reported as a one-year, $6 million deal. It's actually a two-year deal. It's $4 million guaranteed for 2019 and a $6 million club option for 2020 that has a $2 million buyout. So Markakis is guaranteed $6 million, but it's actually $4 million for 2019 and a guarantee of two for 2020. And I think it's probably wise to assume that's a one-year deal. But if Markakis is actually good in 2019, which is not impossible, obviously he was pretty good in 2018, if that were to happen, there is the potential for some value in 2020 if he were to, you know, fight off the aging curve entirely and be good again. But I can't imagine that's going to be the most likely outcome. So it's basically a one year six million dollar deal. That's just kind of important and some of the machinations here. So we'll sort of drill down. I do want to take a little bit of the more positive approach at the beginning. At least I will, and I'll sort of tee you up if you want to go in a different direction. But you and I discussed on this program, I think more than once, but at least once, the potential of Markakis coming back at a reasonable salary as sort of a precursor to other things happening. Now, at the time we said that, it was basically, we're okay with this if they do something else, a la Real Muto or something else. Step one has happened here. Markakis is on a very reasonable contract. I think neither one of us probably are excited about the prospect of him playing as a quote everyday player, end quote. But 1 year, $6 million for Markakis is actually less than I thought he was going to get on the market. And in a vacuum, I stress this again, in a vacuum, it's a good value. So let's just start there. What was your first reaction? That was sort of mine. Just, I think I immediately tweeted that even this is a good value, but if depending on what else happens, that's where I am. Are you in the same place as I am? Or are you one of those people that's ready to burn down Liberty Media and all those fun, and all those fun entities?
Yeah. I mean, there's many, many layers to this as you kind of alluded to. And I think my first reaction was what a lot of people had was frustration, because you spend all off season getting excited, thinking about all of the names you hear, you know, everyone from the Bryce Harpers and Mitch Hanigers to the slightly lesser options. And then Ken Rosenthal tweets, Nick Markakis is going back to the Braves. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. In a vacuum, this deal is fine. I mean, there is zero risk associated with a one-year deal for $6 million, $4 million, two-year deal, club option, however you want to frame it. There's really no genuine risk to this deal. Where you're trading off, of course, is the upside. Even if Markakis repeats last year, which was one of maybe his three or four best seasons ever, and he could, I think, with a little more rest. And, of course, everyone knows how good he was early on, and then he fell off. I think even if Markakis is able to repeat 2018, which I think would be a bit of a surprise, and the projection systems don't see him quite doing that, at $4 or $6 million, however you want to phrase it, it's a worthwhile deal. I think, though, with signing Markakis to be your basically everyday right field option, as Anthopoulos said today, you really are kind of limiting the upside that some of the other options out there had. Now, I will say I think it's worth noting that the Braves made this deal in the last week of January, so it wasn't as if they rushed into this move. I think I would have liked it even less if they would have done this in like the second week of November and immediately closed the door on any right field upgrade. The fact that they spent 3 months looking and scouring all the options and they eventually circled back to Nick is, I think it says something about the market right now. And ultimately, I think you, I, and everybody else would have preferred someone with a little more upside. But at the end of the day, after 3 months and at the price they paid, it's hard for me to get too mad about bringing him back for 2019.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think if this happened early, we would have been a lot more upset. And even then, I get the frustration. Let me say that now. I think I just, we probably alluded to this a couple times during the podcast today, but I understand the reaction from the fan base that doesn't like this. And honestly, because of the situation, it's a lot less attractive than you would just say on the surface. You know, 1 year, $6 million for a player of Markakis' stature is fine, obviously. But if we assume he's going to play most days or every day, as they sort of alluded to, Anthopoulos did today on the record, it becomes less appetizing. And especially so if he's sort of in the middle of the lineup, because, he obviously was pretty good last year. I've talked about this a number of times, but he fell off a cliff late. It wasn't only that, but, he had the red hot start. He had one more good stretch in the summer. It wasn't just that hot start, but he had one more good stretch. But after that, he had a sub 700 OPS for the last 2 months of the season. He was genuinely bad for that whole time from August, basically from the end of August on. He was basically below replacement level. That was how bad he was. But, the projection systems have him as like a league average hitter for 2019, which is, fine. His defense was much better last year. It still wasn't good necessarily. I know he won the Gold Glove, but without getting down that rabbit hole, he's not a good defender. He's better because of the way they position him, all that fun stuff. So I think, again, a one-win player is not something that you are going to get excited about in the outfield. He's capable of more than that, to be sure. But I think at 35, you have to point out that, it's one of those things where you can't really expect him to repeat. Maybe it's definitely possible. I wouldn't expect it. I do want to say, kind of hilariously, because I feel like we should do something of a victory lap here, Anthopoulos alluding to the fact that he was fatigued at the end of last season when we got shouted down quite a bit on this podcast. I know I did. I know you did. Yeah. For suggesting that playing every day was not a good idea. I'm going to read the whole quote now from Anthopoulos. This was today, talking about Markakis. On the day they signed him, it wasn't like retrospective. This is what he's saying publicly. And I quote, "In terms of the dip in performance the last 2 months of the year, we take a look at this and really from the middle of August to the end, to the last 6 weeks. And the one thing that is that Nick still hit the ball extremely hard. His exit velocity was still very good at the end. We do think that there's a fatigue component to it. He just hit the ball on the ground a little more, but we think with more rest, he has the potential to maintain the performance that he had in the first 4.5 months," end quote. So yeah, that's something we talked about a lot and knew. So maybe if you want to be more optimistic, that if he is the quote everyday outfielder, but not every single day, like play 140, play 130, like be more, most of these progressive teams, like the Dodgers, like the Red Sox, outside of their elite guys, no one's playing every single day because it doesn't really maximize your players. Like Markakis is not an elite guy. Through any lens, he's not an elite player. The Braves have two and potentially three elite players for this season. Freeman and Acuna, and then Donaldson is number three. I guess Ozzie probably has a little bit of that upside as the fourth guy. But, looking ahead a little bit, They did say on the record a couple times that they think he's going to be an everyday player on Tuesday, but it's kind of all about what you are maximizing him as. One of the things that I tweeted immediately, and I wonder what your response to this is I feel like if the Braves had a manager I was more comfortable with, I would be a little bit more bullish on this. But because I know what we just saw from Stitt the last couple of years with Markakis, I feel like his default is to play him every single day and hit him in the middle of the lineup. And that is not a good outcome, because even if you like the value, and I understand that because I think I do too, that value becomes a lot less if he is playing the prominent role that he played last year.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, it didn't take long. I think shortly after it was announced, they did a conference call with reporters, and you know, it immediately came out that Stitt was now leaning, as things stand, to have Ender back in the leadoff spot. And this is
I was getting there, Scott. We're gonna do that. I promise you. No, it's that one set me. I wouldn't say over the edge, but my mood certainly soured a little bit during that press conference because of
just
that
a little
and a couple other things. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, and again, there's many layers to this. I think you hit the nail on the head. But I think at the same time, though, it's not just Snit who's going to take some of the, I don't necessarily say blame here, but you look at the roster right now, and if who else is going to hit fourth? You know, I mean, there's just the whole thing was finding a power bat for right field, and that's not one of Nick's
not do that.
Strengths, right? So, you know, who's gonna, you know, it's tough to put you know, a platoon. I don't think anyone wants Flowers and McCann doing it. Ozzie, who knows what he does? I mean, if he's more of the guy he was in the first half of last year, you'd be fine. But what if he continues to not adjust to major league pitching? Camargo probably isn't going to play every day. So, you know, like you said, it kind of opened up an old can of worms. But at the end of the day right now, and I know that's going to be part of what we talk about, is kind of what's next, what's the fallout from this. There's just not a ton of options right now because you have a couple of guys in the order who are limited and probably are better suited batting in the bottom of the order.
Yeah, we're going to get there momentarily. I do want to say, though, like, the problem with this optically is that at this moment, the dirty secret is that the Braves aren't that good on offense right now. Like, as currently constructed, even last year, this is a 91 club, but the Braves were fifth in the National League in runs scored, which is fine, but not necessarily ridiculously good. They were sixth in WRC+, they were sixth in OPS. They were, you know, slightly better than average National League offense. But when you factor that in with a pitching staff that has some upside, obviously, but isn't like lights out, like elite pitching staff, that doesn't look like a World Series contender, frankly. I think obviously there's a long way to go here. We're still in late January. It's like the season begins tomorrow, but it is worth pointing out, and I think Las Vegas has even said this now out loud, basically in a couple different spots, the Braves are projected for 84 wins, and that is kind of what this roster is at this moment. I think they obviously won 90 last year, and if Josh Donaldson is elite, then it's higher than 84 wins. I get that. He's obviously a big upgrade. And they still have Camargo to play around the diamond, et cetera, et cetera. But I think if you look at the Braves roster top to bottom, sort of in comparison to some other projected 90-plus win clubs, they're just not as good as those teams are. And that won't necessarily change, even if they make one or two moves. And you kind of need Acuna and Freeman to be as good as they are, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think it's worth pointing out that, as you kind of allude to there, they have three or four good hitters on this roster, and everybody else is kind of a question mark. They, you know, they have the big two in Freeman and Acuna, and I think Donaldson, if he's healthy, we can kind of reasonably assume he's going to be very good. After that, I mean, I think Ozzie is that next guy, but you have to figure that Enciarte and Swanson, projection-wise, you have to think that those guys are average hitters or worse, and then your catcher platoon is worse than it was last year. Because McCann isn't as good as Suzuki, just flat out. So your offense might be the same as last year at this moment, maybe, because you figure Donaldson's better than Camargo, even if Camargo was obviously good last year. But if you kind of throw everything into the wash, it's kind of the same, and the same isn't a very good outcome given where it was last year. I mean, it's kind of just a secret, honestly, but I'm not trying to be super negative. I'm really not. But at the same time, that's kind of bridges into what you're saying, in that if Markakis is the move and this is the end of the moves on the offense, I'm going to be pretty underwhelmed, and so is the whole fan base. But if it's something else, if it's Real Muto, if it's even if it's like a top tier starter, if they do something else, it makes this move look better. But if it's not Real Muto, honestly, like, I don't want to pigeonhole it that much, but it kind of is so obvious that you almost have to. I don't know what else you do on the offense right now if it's not a catcher upgrade, and that particular catcher upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, the only real place, I mean, you talk about upgrading, and unless, I mean, it's always possible you pull a rabbit out of the hat, but obviously you mentioned Real Muto at catcher. You're not doing anything at first. You're not doing anything at second or third. I guess that something could happen at shortstop, though. Changing up your shortstop in the last week of January or February is not something done.
Especially when you also have Camargo on the roster. It wasn't like they – I mean, I'm with you. That is the other spot. And I guess maybe the other outfield thing, if, like, you know, there was some buzz early in the offseason that Ender could be traded. So maybe if they – but if outfield was that big – if it was easy to add an outfielder, they would have just added an outfielder. You know what I mean? So – I just think that Real Muto is the name we've been talking about for months, and even today, Craig Mish was reporting, and I quote, that the Marlins still covet Braves prospects above all others, end quote. So that was interesting to hear. But, I mean, we even said this specifically. We said, I think 2-3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, that kind of the only way that Marquez will be palatable as a starting right fielder is if you have Real Muto at catcher. I kind of still believe that, to be honest with you.
I'm right there with you because there's just not a whole lot of, you know, 2 months ago, I think the idea of potentially trading Ender was a little more feasible. But at this point in the offseason, you trade him away and then you have to find another outfielder. And as we've seen, there's just not a ton out there. So I don't want to say it's Real Muto or bust, but it kind of is, right? I mean, and again, that's not to say
it's not really our style to say that, but I think I agree. Like, it's not, I don't want to put it as like 100% that. But unless something is just completely off the board, which it could be, I mean, that's something that's always in play, something completely off the board. But look around the team and the roster and the dynamics. Anything else in the lineup would be unexpected to be sure. I think Real Muto makes a ton of sense. He's a massive upgraded catcher. I think you can talk about what happens after that deal happens in terms of just prospect capital and what you do with Flowers and McCann, et cetera. But Real Muto is such a big upgrade at catcher that you would suddenly feel okay about the offense. Whereas right now, if you roll into the season with this offense, there's a chance it's better than last year's offense, but there's really no chance that it's an elite offense. I can't really see that happening. I guess maybe if all three of your big bats are elite at the same time, they can just carry you through a season, and maybe Ozzie breaks out. But at the very least now, you have three spots in your lineup. This is even with Real Muto, by the way. Without him, you have four spots in your lineup that are probably league average or worse. And if look around, like the contenders don't really have that. They might have one or two, and most lineups do have one or two, but nobody's got four that's trying to win a World Series. No. And I guess you could be optimistic and say maybe Marquez does what he did again, and maybe Ender bounces back to his 200 hit season, et cetera, or Dansby breaks out. But that's a lot of ifs, man. Like, the offense is just not that good.
Yeah, well, and friend of the program Bennett Hipp had a great tweet today that, you know, if Josh Donaldson does get hurt, which would be, you know, he was hurt last year, he was hurt the year before. If Josh Donaldson gets hurt, the Braves are in a lot of trouble. I mean, we're talking about the lineup right now.
You go to Camargo, but that's, I mean, Camargo, I guess if Camargo repeated last year, you wouldn't be, quote, in a bunch of trouble, but your depth is now gone, and that was the whole point of that move.
Exactly, the whole point. So, yeah, I mean, you're really relying on these things. God forbid Freddie gets hurt, or, you know, if Acuna gets hurt, the season is probably in a lot of trouble anyway. Not ideal. You know, it's interesting, and as we're talking about lineup and money, you know, this does, though, have, I think, a potential part two of the move, and maybe that's our transition of Anthopoulos said that the Braves had a number for Marquez, and up until, it sounds like, Sunday, Marquez's camp was not willing to meet that number, which was, again, either 4 or 6 million, however you want to look at it. And until the Braves and Marquez were able to get to that number, the deal wasn't going to happen. Now, I don't pretend to know what goes on in the Liberty media and Terry McGuirk's boardroom as far as team salary goes. It's a touchy subject, and it's one that, with good reason, fans are frustrated with. But this almost has the same feel, although there obviously wasn't the immediate part two of it that we saw with McCann Donaldson. But it kind of feels like, to me at least, that this screams a lot of the Brian McCann deal, where he signed for less money than what people thought. whether you believe it or not, he signed with the Braves at a lower cost than going elsewhere and for more money or more years. That was reported a couple places today with Nick. It kind of feels
he said
like,
it, by the way, at the presser, another, they both did.
Owen Thopolis did. So, yeah. You know, it has a little bit of the same feel. Now, will they? I don't know. Maybe they really are being cheapskates and this is it. And the talk of making another move is just lip service to get the calm the fans and the reporters down a little bit. But it does have a feel because it's such a low number that it leaves the Braves with flexibility. Now, maybe nothing comes of it. Maybe they do tomorrow, next week, whatever it may be. You would hope that it leaves the door open for something and allows them to do that, because if they do then use the money they saved by paying Nick a little bit less than what people thought and use that money to add Real Muto and maybe a late inning reliever, then the deal is a little more palatable. But until that happens, I think it's fair to have all the suspicions in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it was a popular punching bag topic after Anthopoulos said what he said about the money, because of the fact that this is a Braves team that hasn't really earned that equity to say that they're going to spend this money. Maybe they will, but I mean, it kind of plays into every stereotype imaginable that they would not spend this money. I will say that out loud to sort of placate people, because I totally get it. I agree with you that the number being that low does make it seem as if something else is coming, but I'll also say on the other side, I am skeptical of that. I mean, it's not as if it's impossible, but right now they have about $115 million or so committed to players. That would be down from last year's payroll. If they open the season with a lower payroll, people are going to be very upset, and I won't blame them at all.
Because I'm with you. Yeah.
You can't go win the division. You can't draw the way they drew last year, which was way up from the previous year, and come back and spend less money. I understand the logistics. I understand the market. You can give me the excuses that you want to give me, but that is not going to look good, and I will be not leading the way, but I'll certainly be on the bandwagon of people that's upset about that.
With that said, I'll be right there. Yeah.
I mean, we all will be. I mean, Eric said the same thing. It's not like that's anything groundbreaking, but I do think it's important to note that it's not a guarantee. I mean, Anthopoulos was definitely spinning it in the way that you were saying there, that this is a move that sort of allows them to do other things. But until they do the other things, skepticism is probably warranted. I will say on the flip side that judging the offseason right now is not a good idea either. I think there was a rush to that some today to say, all right, this is all they're going to do, and what a disaster it is. Well, I kind of agree with you. If this was March 22nd or whatever day it is, then I would agree with you. Like, yeah, that's kind of a disaster. But I'm not going to pour dirt on them now. I will just say, as I've said before, if this is all they do, then it's not a good offseason. Donaldson, by the way, we were huge on that move. We were higher than most on that move. We really liked Donaldson. He's very good at baseball. There was very low risk there, despite the big price tag. That was a move that I really supported. So we shouldn't just forget that. That was a big upgrade that they made. But with the high hopes of this offseason and the rotation how it is and the bullpen how it is right now, there's not a lot of strengths, like full-blown, you know, no doubt strengths on this roster. You have a couple of guys who are elite players. You have two of those guys. You have Donaldson, who could be there. You have Fulte, who was really good last year. But you look up and down the team, there aren't many stars on this roster at this moment.
No.
They're future guys. There are young guys who could be stars. You know, Ozzie could be a star, all the young pitchers. But in terms of just 2019 projection, this is not a 90. I don't think this is a 91 team again at this moment. Could it win 90 games again with this roster? Absolutely, they could. I wouldn't project it, and neither is Vegas. Vegas is smarter than all of us.
Vegas always knows.
They do, and there's, I mean, most Braves fans, even two weeks ago when that number came out, it was like, oh man, that seems really low. And then today, like, everyone's making jokes about how it's too high. Like, it's just kind of funny to see perception swing. But I also get it, because until they do it, have your guard up, but don't judge the whole offseason. That would be my advice at this moment is just skepticism is totally warranted, but don't, you know, pour it on them right now in January.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's still time. I mean, like you said, I mean, there was even some talk today that with the way the free agent market is, some guys might not sign until the first or second week of spring training. Now,
obviously, he even said that. Bubba said that. He said something like the next move could be in camp. And I was like, what?
Yeah, that let's hope not. That wouldn't be fun. No. But no, you're right. I mean, it's now right now this team is a similar team to the one that won 90 games a year ago. But as you said, the Nationals, I would imagine are going to be better. They were on the wrong side of some luck last year, even though they look like they might lose Bryce, although at the end of the day, they might end up getting him back. But they've added, obviously, the Mets are going to be better if they can stay healthy. The Phillies have added, and they were pretty solid last year. So it's not so much that the Braves have gotten worse. I think, you know, you think about Acuna for a full season. You hope that Ozzie's a little more steady. The upside of Donaldson, Camargo being able to play all over, you know, on and on. But everybody around the Braves that they're going to play, what, 30, 40% of their schedule against, they're going to be that much better. And I think that's where you're going to see, again, as you said, as things stand right now, it's not so much what the Braves have or haven't done. It's just what the teams around them have done to better their clubs. And make no mistake about it, they've all made, all three teams in the East, or at least I'll say the Mets and the Nationals, have both had really good off seasons. I'm not sold on the Phillies yet. We'll see if they end up getting Machado or Harper. That certainly swings it one way or the other. But I mean, make no mistake about it, New York and Washington have had really good off seasons, had some really nice players. And again, that's not to say the Braves have made bad decisions. I think you can at least defend all three of the signings so far, especially at the price of McCann and Mark Hakus. But they're going to be better, and that's something the Braves are going to have to deal with, and it might be something that ultimately swings the pendulum in the East next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. Division is going to be better than it was a year ago, and I think people, and we said this during the run last year, I think people kind of are understating how much, I don't want to say good fortune, but there were a lot of high-end outcomes that were reached by individual players last year during the 90-win season. I think even if you look at the roster objectively, you know, 6 months later now, I think that was not a 90-win roster. This is me talking now, maybe you don't agree, but I think it was a better roster than we all thought it was going to be. But I think if you tell me exactly what the Braves had last year and projected again forward, I would have said it was a sub 90-win roster. And they could be better. Your point is a good one that, you know, Donaldson being there, there's some growth potential from young guys, even in the rotation, and the bullpen was shaky, as we remember last year. So I'm not saying that they can't improve even as currently constructed. I just wouldn't project it. And that's the difference here. But, I mean, it's kind of interesting going back to the value. I had this note that I haven't said it out loud just yet. Just, you mentioned the value proposition for McCann and Marquez particularly. Marquez's value, I had people kind of understanding that a little bit. And this is someone, I think we're famously low on him compared to some. We got a lot of grief last year, especially with, and probably rightly so, for being too low on him at times. And I'll say this, he got less money than Kurt Suzuki and Anibal Sanchez.
Yeah, he like, absolutely. I mean, I believe when they say he took a disc. I mean,
I do too. Yeah, only if, I mean, it might be mild. It might be a mild discount. And I think the market just wasn't there. I think if he had a big deal, he would have taken it. But, you know, I would have predicted that if he was coming back, he would be taking less money. That was kind of always what we thought. And maybe he'll give the hometown discount. He mentioned his kids and giving a couple of media interviews on Tuesday. I get all that. But again, I know we're lower on Marquez as a player, but the value is good. It's just whether you use him or not. And I don't want to get into like a 20-minute sticker conversation, but it's just one of those things, man. Like if he's in a better role for himself, it might work out great. And if he's not, if he's sitting fourth or fifth every day, then it may not go well. And we sort of skirted around it a little bit. The little tidbit that Anthopoulos dropped today about the lineup construction was something I wanted to at least touch on briefly. I will say this as sort of a backdrop. Zach Diller, good friend of the program from Fox Sports South, tweeted this and kind of bumped it for me because I actually forgot about this. On December the 5th, Anthopoulos said on the record that his opinion was, quote, getting your best hitters the most at-bats makes the most sense, end quote, and that he favored a 1-2-3 construction of Acuna, Donaldson, and Freeman in the 1-2-3 spots. But even at that point, he said the ultimate decision is made by the manager, which is Brian Snitker. Today, I'm going to quote Anthopoulos what he said today, and I quote, I think Snit is more bullish that Ender Inciarte has a chance to be the guy that he was in 2017 for us. Obviously, when we get to spring training and open day, we'll see where he is on that. And that was in reference to him hitting leadoff. Now, I don't want to go too deep into this because it's January, but an example of not good deployment of this roster would be Inciarte hitting leadoff and Marquez hitting fifth every day, which is basically what was propped out there by the front office today. It's still January. I don't want to panic about that, but boy, that not really helped my mood when trying to talk about this and put together the rundown. I was like, man, I was ready to kind of sell this to the fan base. It's like, everybody hold on, it's going to be okay. And then I was like, oh, by the way, everyday player from Arcakis, fifth in the lineup, ender hitting leadoff. And it's like, oh man, you guys are not trying to make this easy on me today.
No. Whenever it happened, that was actually one of the first things that crossed my mind, that I hope they keep Acuna leading off where he was so successful last year, and you want to get your best players the most at bats. And, you know, we've said it before on here. It's been said many, many times, but you only lead off once a game. And other than that, it's the guy who gets the most at bats regularly. So you understand why, you know, Joe Maddon famously now has utilized Anthony Rizzo as his leadoff guy on occasion because he wants his best hitters getting the most at bats. Now, sure, it might be a little funky in the first inning, but if it's the seventh inning and the bases are loaded and you're down by two runs and there's two outs, do you want Ender to come to the plate or do you want Ronald Acuna to come to the plate? And it's such an old school way of thinking. I'm almost a little taken back that Anthopoulos would say what he said today. And maybe he's purely relaying what Snit has in mind. And
yeah,
over the course of spring,
I have a feeling that was managerial.
Help.
But
I'm sure it is. So, you know, who knows? Like you said, it's what, January 22nd. There's 2+ months to go before they take the field for real. Hopefully they're in a position to have Acuna, Donaldson, and Freeman 1-2-3. For the reasons just outlined, but I think ultimately, as we've mentioned a couple times now, if they are able to upgrade the lineup somewhere, as we said, catcher seems like the most obvious area to upgrade. Maybe it's not as much of an issue, and everybody can slide down if you add another big bat. But with today's signing, of course, you do kind of eliminate the one area where you could really upgrade the lineup, and obviously they didn't choose to do.
Yeah, and I think if they trade for Realmuto, we'll come on and say that this lineup now feels better, even with Marquez playing most days. And I also think, underratedly, I would be thinking about trying Camargo in the outfield a little bit, if only because he's a pretty good option on days when I would hope, by the comments today, that Marquez would be taken, treated with a little bit more care in the outfield. Even if he's playing well, it would be a good idea to play him less, and maybe Camargo fits in there. Maybe Adam Duvall is around, or maybe he's not. I think it's important to point out again today that that's a non-guaranteed deal for Adam Duvall, and Adam Duvall at $3 million looks a little bit weirder when you have Marquez on the roster as well, making four or six, whatever, however you want to say it. So that maybe that's not a partnership that's long for Atlanta, but regardless, like, they're gonna have to get more creative now than if they were slotting in AJ Pollock, or if they were slotting in, you know, definite, you know, full-time starter X. Cause I don't think Marquez is that player. Maybe he is. Yeah. Maybe he'll prove me wrong again, like he did last year. Worth pointing out, we were wrong about Marquez last year. He was bad down the stretch, but in terms of just overall value, he was much, much better than I ever thought he was going to be last year. So
yeah,
we are capable of being wrong.
Oh yeah, that's for
just
sure.
Something. I wanted to own that. I wanted to own that for like the 12th time, but we were wrong about that. So, but well, you know, it's one of those things, man. Like, I just have to tell you what I see, and the value is good with Marquez. But the value being good and you being a good baseball team are not necessarily the same thing. If you get, because honestly, at the money he's making, if he's a one-win player, it's a quote good value. But if you're playing a one-win player every single day in the outfield, that's not a good decision.
No, you're right.
Organizationally,
it's the opportunity cost, and
yes,
it's the trade-off of, yeah, you know what you're going to get out of right field, other than, and that's to be fair. And we've said before of the, and we kind of touched on this at the beginning about how the Braves spent really what 2.5-3 months evaluating their outfield options. Every single outfielder on the market had some kind of war. I think Mitch Haniger was the one guy who made a lot of sense, and it doesn't seem like Seattle's going to trade him. They're going to keep him as they kind of retool. But every single player that was available in some way, shape, or form had a legitimate question, and we talked about how they're going to have to prioritize what they want to. You know, we talked about Castellanos from Detroit. Well, he can't play defense. And you talk about David Peralta, who can't hit lefties and isn't as good away, you know, away from Chase Field as righties. Or, I mean, wait.
No, I got you.
You got me. Yeah. Yep. So it was a long day. So, ultimately
Harper,
they decided.
Harper, the price tag. I mean, you can go on and on. Like, McCutcheon got a lot of money, for instance.
Yeah. Michael Brantley has the injury concern. Sound like he wanted to be in a place where he could DH. And and so on and so forth. So they're really AJ Pollock. He's played a full season once in 6 years and didn't have a great return last year. So there's all kinds of question marks. There was no obvious candidate like there was last winter with Yelich or with Lorenzo Cain or like that. There was no one who made all the sense in the world who could be obtained at what I would imagine to be a reasonable price. And ultimately they chose to bring back Nick. I think one thing that we haven't touched on and something that Anthopoulos has said for really day one is how important a good clubhouse is. And we saw after the signing today, all the players, Mike Foltynewicz tweeted, I think it was, you know, how Nick was the best teammate he's ever had. And he's learned so much from him. And
he said he was the most underrated player in baseball, which I found hysterical on the heels of a Gold Glove and a Silver Slugger Award, neither of which that he actually earned. That was hysterical to me.
Yeah.
But I understood it. I mean, it is a good example of the fact that, and we've said this before, but everyone loves Markakis. That cannot be understated.
Ozzy, he's very popular. Acuna, you know, I think Acuna posted a picture of them together. Ozzy was comment. I mean, it is clear this guy is very well respected and very well liked in a clubhouse. And there is a human nature element that is absolutely a real part of it, that you are going to basically spend 6 to 8 months with a group of 25 dudes, millionaire dudes. You're going to be on the planes together. You're going to be in hotels together. You're going to be in a clubhouse for 8 hours a day together. You have to get along. You have to be able to play as a team. And you know, it's easy to kind of laugh at and go, well, they'll get over it. You know, good teams never have these problems. But at the end of the day, it is something that Anthopoulos preaches and wants to have on his team. And all the players on the team very much respect and appreciated playing with Nick. And that can't go so far to the point where you're trading off good on-field performance for a guy who's good in the clubhouse. But I think it is a part of it played a factor, at least, into why they brought him back.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that if he was just like a meh kind of individual, that they would not have signed him. I'm going to say that out loud.
Yeah.
I think if he was just like a neutral clubhouse guy that you could sort of take or leave, I don't think he'd be back with the Braves. That's me projecting a little bit, but I'm actually kind of confident about that, knowing what, I mean, it's all off the record stuff and I'm not in the clubhouse, but knowing enough people that are around the team, I'm pretty sure about that. That's just, and that's, you know, I understand it. As you've mentioned, it's an important thing. I mean, we've probably gone longer than we needed to go on all of this, just saying some stuff that we've all said. And I'm sure we have some new listeners, so hopefully that sort of encapsulates our big picture view on Markakis. Give me your, like, short synopsis on your feelings right now. I know we covered a lot of ground in the last 35 minutes or so. Give me your, like, 1 minute to 2 minute, you know, full-scale Scott Coleman feelings right now in January. It's sort of, like, summarize where you are with this move and sort of how everything is right now.
Yeah, I think to me it all depends on what comes next. I mean, if the Braves don't really do anything of note after today, it is absolutely fair to be annoyed, to be frustrated, to be upset, and frankly to go into the season thinking this probably isn't a playoff team. I don't think if I had, you know, gun to my head today, I don't think I'd pick the Braves to make the playoffs. But it is fair to note, as we've said, it's January 22nd, 23rd, by the time you're probably listening, they have some money to spend, at least by all accounts from Mark Bowman and others. If this time in 2 weeks, they've added Realmuto and signed a reliever, then I think you look at the offseason a whole different way, because you say, okay, well, they were thrifty with bringing Markakis back at $4 million instead of paying $18 million to get Pollock on a risky one-year deal. And you just look at it differently. If we're at this point in 2 months and it's about to be opening day and the Braves haven't done anything, well, then I think it's fair to really be critical of the front office and ask what exactly the plan here was, because there were some better players out there. And yeah, they got paid a little bit more, but if they misused their funds or misevaluated the market, then that falls back on the front office. So I don't hate it. I mean, I don't. I know we've criticized Markakis enough over the last 4 years, and I think oddly both you and I don't hate this as much as maybe we thought we would have. Part of that's the cost, and part of it's knowing that something else could be coming. But again, if nothing else does come of it, then I think it's more than fair to be upset and frustrated, and hopefully for all of our sakes they do go out and add another impact piece or two over the next 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, I think we're very close to each other on this one. I would encapsulate what you're saying as well, and for me, it's a good value. That's the number one thing that I'll say. In a vacuum, it's a good value. it becomes a far less impressive value or far less, and I guess the value sort of flies out the window if he's playing every single day in a bad lineup spot and just being oversaturated. I think you used the words opportunity cost earlier. That is definitely something that you have to keep in mind here, is that he is probably not going to be a player that you are super in love with playing every single day in the outfield for a playoff contender. And that does matter as much as the money does. Yeah, between that, and I agree with you that the next step is the biggest thing. If it's nothing or if it's very little, then bring the torches out. I understand that completely. I'll be critical of them. I'll be very critical of the Braves if they don't spend any more money this offseason, both from an optics standpoint of having your payroll go down after a winning season and a pretty new ballpark, et cetera, and because this team isn't good enough right now to compete. I think that they got spoiled in some ways, and I'm sure we did as well, about 2018 being sort of ahead of schedule by a year. But when you win 90 games and you come out and you can basically bring the entire band back with money to spend, expectation should be that you're going to improve, not that you're going to stay stable or not, or actually decline. And I'm with you that if the season started today, I would not pick the Braves to make the playoffs. Like, could they make the playoffs? Absolutely. Could they win the division? Absolutely. As currently constructed, they certainly could do that. I wouldn't pick it. And that's disappointing because I was hoping, and I think a lot of people were hoping, to have a big splash or two, spend a bunch of money, improve your team kind of drastically enough to where it's easy to pick the Braves to repeat as division champs. I can't do that right now. If you told me that they add Real Muto, maybe I pick the Braves. I wouldn't necessarily say that I would definitely pick them then either, because of the pitching uncertainty and some other stuff, but that's sort of a marked increase. Like, you basically go from a 1 or 2 win catcher in Tyler Flowers to a 5 win player in Real Muto. That's 3 or 4 wins. Like, that's a lot of value coming in. So if that's the move, then, you know, everything makes more sense. By the way, though, if that's their only other move, they still didn't spend any money.
I was just thinking about that. They're at if you don't include the arbitration guys, they've spent almost $30 million, probably 20. You know, I guess if you split the difference and say it's $5 million for Markakis, Donaldson was 23, McCann was 2. So they're at about $30 million. Yeah.
But of course, Markakis made $11 million last year. So you're saving at least $5 million, if not $7 million, on that contract versus from year to year. So yeah, it's a situation where it's kind of funny that we've sort of put all our eggs in the Real Muto basket. Even if they did that, payroll isn't going to be up from last year if that's their big move. Now, they could still do more than that. They have money to spend. Of course, Anthopoulos was predictably asked about whether they'd use that money on pitching, and he kind of was coy about it. And I think that's the easiest way to spend money right now in the offseason, considering their roster construction right now with Markakis on the team already. Free agency is not really a avenue to add money right now because they don't really have anywhere. Where are they going to sign someone? They don't really have a position to put someone.
No.
Pitching is the only way you can really spend money right now if you're the Braves, naturally. I mean, I guess if you made a big trade, you could do that, but they're not going to go out and sign a free agent right now. I mean, although, this is funny, it might have been a joke of a question, but I think it was actually interesting, and we can sort of end on this. What happens if Bryce Harper comes back? This is theoretical, this is not going to happen, but we'll say Bryce Harper because he's the obvious name, but I think at this point, Markakis, the number is so low in Markakis that he shouldn't stop them from doing something if it just fell in their lap. Like, if something weird happened and a team had a player that wanted out all of a sudden, or Harper's market craters and he wants to sign a 3-year deal in Atlanta, something crazy like that, the money is not big enough for Markakis for you to care about that. Like, you wouldn't just be like, for instance, Mitch Haniger is your favorite conundrum, like your favorite possibility. If he's suddenly available, the Braves should still trade for Mitch Haniger. Like, they should not let the presence of Markakis stop them from signing someone or trading for someone if that happens. It's not likely. I think it's very unlikely. But one of the very, very small values of having that guy making that little money is that shouldn't stop you from doing anything else. It probably would.
Oh, yeah.
But it shouldn't.
Yeah. No, you never say never. I mean, you're right. If some crazy deal comes along, you would hope they'd be flexible and realize you have to adjust sometimes, but...
Well, McCann at catcher. Like, it's gonna be weird if they trade for Real Muto and they've already paid McCann and they have Flowers. Like, that's gonna be weird. But guess what? You have Real Muto, who might be the best catcher in the league. You just figure it out. So,
yeah. Good things. You can never have too many good options, too many good players. You figure things out. So you're right. I mean, again, something crazy could always happen over the next 6 weeks. Who knows? But I think ultimately that they've probably found their outfield and they're going to roll with it for better or worse.
I agree. And hopefully better includes Real Muto or something crazy in the pitching staff. But yeah, you know, the too long didn't read version of this podcast is the move on its face is fine, but they better do something else. Is that accurate, Scott?
Yep, they go. We could have done this in like 45 seconds.
Would have been a really less, I guess it probably would have been better for people to listen, since people, I'm sure some people like this, but I'm sure some people hated it too. We have our fans and our detractors. It is what it is. But I enjoy talking about baseball, even if it's kind of in a weird scenario like this, in an emergency pod on a Tuesday. It's like 11:30 Eastern, and
especially when it's been so long. I mean, I think part of the outrage today too was like we've waited 2 months for a move, and then it's something as boring as bringing Nick back.
It was definitely. I was actually on the phone with someone who is a friend of mine in an offline sense, but a long term Braves fan, and we were talking about this afternoon, and I pointed that out too. It was like I think part of the outrage from the fan base, and by the way, there was a lot of outrage today, kind of surprisingly, because I think. My feeling, at least maybe this is just me. My feeling last year was that Markakis was very popular among the fans, at least casual fans. And now they were like really upset about him coming back. It was kind of strange to see that.
I think it's the name factor and the disappointment. Maybe. I mean, you hear AJ Pollock or Bryce and all the names. Maybe there's a little bit of the sense of wanting something new. I don't know, but that's a good point. There was more negativity today than I thought.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the people that are like closer to where we are. It wasn't like the analytical people. Granted, those people were doing it as well to a certain degree. But I think kind of weirdly, it almost flipped. People like you and I who think about the numbers more were almost higher on this move than the fans were, which is crazy because we've always been lower on the fans than the fans on Markakis. So it kind of came full circle in some ways. But just what I was going to say about that is I think part of the nature is that people, A, want change, but like it's just – I don't want to say it's a thud, but it's the anticipation and, you know, we're sort of leaning into it, kind of making fun of the fact that nothing's happened and we have all these like emergency episodes of nothing in the whole winter. And you're tweeting like every morning, this is going to be the day. This is going to be the day, Scott.
I did today, predict you, this though. So last night at like 1 a.m. as I'm getting ready to go to bed, I had a feeling and I said, today is going to be the day. And I hadn't done like the daily prediction. I think, honest to God, I think it was my first prediction of like the 2 month lull. And I was like, today's going to be the day. And then sure enough, I got my wish.
Yeah. Bad timing for you or good timing. However, I mean, I guess something happened. So you were
good
right.
And bad. Yeah.
So anyway, we've done more than enough on this. I'm sure we'll have more in the future. And that's why I'm sure we got down a couple of rabbit holes that we shouldn't have. We probably should have saved for February.
As we usually do.
We always do line construction and all that fun stuff. My singular pet peeve in the world is line construction. So my apologies to everyone for ranting about that, even in January. Scott, please tell people where they can find your work. I know we'll have we're sort of building now. Now that February is almost here, it feels like baseball season is on the horizon. I'm still in full basketball mode, admittedly, but it's coming. I mean, this is sort of a signal that it's, or I guess more of a reminder that it's coming. But pitchers and catchers are like, what, 2-3 weeks away? It's not like
I think about
right
3 weeks, and usually guys start showing up for workouts and everything like that. Yeah, so, but no, I mean, you're right. It's getting close, and we'll be here before we know it. As always, check out the site. We had a lot of good stuff today on the Markakis. Demetrius had a real nice piece on kind of what to make of Nick coming back for the 1 year. And as we've said, the opportunity cost and trade-off. And as always on Twitter, it's ScottColeman55 and lots of fun shenanigans over there.
Follow Scott, follow the site at Talking Chop on Twitter. And of course, read us every single day. We had a massive prospect list rankings, and that was my plan for the next podcast, was to talk to Eric about the prospect rankings, and we're going to do that at some point, I promise, just not today. That'll be in the near future, and I'm sure everyone has noticed that we're sort of off the normal Sunday schedule. My plan was to hold off until Sunday and kind of get back on schedule, but that was, of course, pre-move. It's the winter, and it's really easy during the season to record on Sunday nights because that's when the Braves usually don't play games. But in the winter, we'll be more fluid. I think you guys have noticed that by now. But every week or so, we'll be here and talk about something with the Braves. And if there's an emergency like this one, or if there's a Real Muto trade or a big move, we'll come back and hopefully that night talk about something as we did here. So please subscribe. Please tell your friends. Share the pod. I know there's a lot of Braves fans that don't really listen to podcasts or read content. And it's a good way to pass the time. Maybe they'll like it. So have them give it a chance. Your parents, your brothers, your sisters, your cousins. All that fun stuff. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it, man. And we'll do it again very soon.
Absolutely, buddy. Take care.